This is the warm days that drift away while the sun sets and the ghettos play. Long nights on a hot summer's block where you sip your brew and never touch your glass. This is for eyes that cry like yours and learn to smile again. Rise above the pain. This is for you and your crew, the ones that's true, will always love you no matter what you do.
Rise is the light, the light, the light, the light, the light. It's the light, the light, the light. It's the light, the light, the light. Your life, your life. It's the light, your life, my life.
This is for soldiers who bust their guns in the name of freedom, not the game of funds. True queens who raise their kids, implement the knowledge, show them how to live.
Spitfire Bees, Eliza, women of color in Montreal, we come together to say no to the silencing of our voices.
Welcome to Spitfire Women of Color Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's great to be with you at the start of the Year of the Horse. Great to be in studio with Malek, Mercedes, and Victoria holding it down on the tech. And we'd also like to welcome our in-studio guest, Gao. Great to have you here.
First up today, we bring you a roundup of local and international WOC news stories, including the story of Cece McDonald, an African-American trans woman and activist who was recently released from prison after defending herself from a racist transphobic attack in Minnesota back in 2012.
Malek will be speaking with migrant justice activist Rosalind Wong about the current climate in Canada for women of color migrants, and Mercedes will bring us the shocking case of Tanel Starr, an Aboriginal teen who was asked to remove her Got Land hoodie in class. We're going to be playing some great tunes tonight, plugging both Ari Swan's debut EP and New York-based women of color artist Matana Roberts' latest album, Coin Coin Chapter 2, Mississippi Moonchild, which was released in 2013. For now, Batches and Cookies featuring Sophia Aris from Lizzo's new album, Lizzo Bangers.
All that and more coming up right now on Spitfire Radio, CKUT 90.3 FM.
Batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, got my batches and cookies, I 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 got my batches and cookies, got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my remember that gooey gooey you took and said ooey ooey, I need two or twoey at least for my baby booey ooey. Floating like boobies, now you got a nice pair like some boobies, and you high up that doobie doobie with your mystery machine.
Scooby,
feeling bad where you should be, BB don't make nothing cheapy. Hanging with them creepy creepies that sit in them bathroom peepees, looking holy holy while looking through them holy holies. Holy guacamole, you got that gooey, now you a phony.
I got my
batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my cream, got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my batches and cookies, I got my cream.
out of the club. But I'm drip, drip, dripping, shaving sweet. Cinnamon on skin with a hooligans. Y'all came to rock and we came to hop. But a swing and a lift, swing high for the eye. Go and take that sip, got milk in the thigh. Saw boot on Sunny Bay from green. Too bad my high process for the dream, dream. What does it mean? It means I think you take from me. Unless it's just on DMT, that's all up in my energy. Yeah, yeah. Gonna place that bet if you want to come testing. My possessed with a bullet vest and a curious chest. Got the M on the brain, but I have the best. Hey, I'm plugged up, call me dough cooking. Goofy Saturday, soul tookin'. Batches in a row looking. Magic is all hell we living. Never ever will we give in to a wag. Beak, fuck with laser beak in these black streets. Get it, don't fear, and we give it. Haters will forbid it. Then follow to the minutes, figures of imagination. Now I want to rule the nation. We the ones that did escape, and then we fought for new ovens, and we made it. Yeah.
And get ready for the industry in a nutshell.
Them girls don't get got to be the only thing you got. Better keep them in that black pot. The only thing colder than the local talent of the winter. Thrift store shopping look like an winter.
That was Batches and Cookies featuring Sophia Ayres from Lizzo's new album, Lizzo Bangers. Thanks to Victoria for bringing us new music all the time. Tonight, Victoria will also be speaking with Women of Color American artist Emma Gray, Ari Swan. We'll be hearing about her work with the Montreal indie scene, as well as the impact of the free improv music movement in the NDG youth community. But before we get to that, here's Alyssa.
All right, ladies, let's do this. So this is a roundup of cray cray news that, you know, we have to talk about. So Madonna, first up, went all kinds of something something when earlier this month she used hashtag this N-word, you know, she didn't actually use the N-word, in a photo caption on Instagram referring to her son Rocco, who is white. After receiving a backlash, Madonna issued this apology, and I'm quoting her: "I am sorry if I offended anyone with my use of the N-word on Instagram. It was not meant as a racial slur. I am not a racist. There's no way to defend the use of the N-word. It was all about intention. It was used as a term of endearment toward my son, who is white. I appreciate that it's a provocative word, and I apologize if it gave people the wrong impression." That was her apology. Interestingly, she also just happened to bring her adopted black son with her to the Grammys this past Sunday, if anyone saw. This is not the first time Madonna went and said something ridiculously racially insensitive. As Kelly Goff notes in her piece on TheRoot.com, it was reported that Madonna was texting throughout a screening of the recent film 12 Years a Slave, and when another attendee asked her to stop, she allegedly referred to the patron as an enslaver. Other greatest hits in Madonna's racial illiteracy date back years, where she previously stereotyped black men in an interview with Spin magazine, saying, quote, "I have never been treated more disrespectfully as a woman than by black men I've dated. I think black men have just been S-H-I-T-T for so long that in a way black women are willing to accept rage from a black man because they see what's happened to them. Thank you for characterizing all black women who take it from black men, Madonna." Up next, Victoria's going to give us a little something-something.
Okay, so on Martin Luther King Day, a Russian fashionista socialite, Dasha Sukova, made headlines when fashion website Burrow 24/7 published a photo of her sitting atop a chair made to look like a half-naked black woman in bondage gear. So you've got this pristine, fully clothed white woman sitting serenely on the contorted body of a sexualized black woman piece furniture. So what's really disturbing is that no one participating in this photo shoot, from the magazine editors, the artist that sculpted this chair, nor the white model forced to sit, quote unquote, forced to sit, end quote, on top of the racist chair, thought that any of this was problematic, until irate comments flooded the comment section of the website and Sukova's Instagram feed. Sukova quickly removed the picture from her Instagram, while Burrow 24/7 cropped out most of the racism chair, save some kinky boots that were sticking up still. And you can check that on the web. Just Google it. So the fashion website editor fumbled out a non-apology by using the age-old and I think tiring excuse that it's just an art thing. Miroslava Duma stated, "The chair in the photo should only be seen as a piece of art which was created by British pop artist Alan Jones and not as any form of racial discrimination," end quote. To which history and critics point out was false. The chair was not created by Alan Jones, who, BTW, did take the image of the white woman and sexually objectify it in his human furniture series Chair, Table, and Hat Stand in the 1960s. The model, Dasha Sukova, made a statement with slightly more accurate factual information. She states, The chair pictured in the Borough 24/7 website interview is an artwork created by Norwegian artist Bjørn Gard, one of the series that reinterprets art historical works from artist Alan Jones as a commentary on gender and racial politics. Mm. End quote. The verdict's out on the final analysis of Bjørn Gard's recasting of the human furniture piece with a black woman. But what's ironic, of course, is the naive publication of Zakova sitting on top of it. As Misa Kwango writes, the slave chair is the perfect metaphor for how black women are treated by the fashion industry, end quote. BTW, Dasha Zukova is a bit of a celebrity, and that's why we're, like, hearing about it. Her partner, Roman Abramovich, with an estimated fortune of $14.6 billion, is currently the fifth richest person in Russia and the 50th richest person in the world.
Okay, turning to news from the United States. After 19 months in a men's prison, Cece McDonald finally walked free on the morning of Monday, January 13th of this month. Krishan Cece McDonald is an African-American transgender woman who was in prison for killing a man who allegedly harassed her and threatened her with racist, homophobic, and transphobic slurs when McDonald was out with friends one night in Minneapolis in June 2011. McDonald says she was confronted by a group of white men and women outside a neighborhood bar. According to witnesses, the group of bar patrons shouted slurs at her and her friends. McDonald tried to walk away, but the confrontation escalated and Cece was cut in the face with a beer bottle by one of the female patrons. A fight ensued. When McDonald walked away, she was pursued by Dean Schmitz. McDonald says she turned around to confront him while holding a pair of scissors she retrieved from her purse. Schmitz was stabbed in the chest and eventually died from the injury. McDonald was charged with 2 counts of second-degree murder. She went on to accept a plea to manslaughter in the second degree and was sentenced to 41 months in a men's prison, even though she identifies as a woman. The profile of the case has brought much-needed attention to the violence faced by trans people, particularly trans women of color, and other cases in which trans people have been charged with crimes while acting in self-defense. A recent case in California provides yet another example of the kind of daily harassment and violence that trans men and women face at alarming rates, and what happens when they attempt self-defense. Jules Gutierrez, a 16-year-old transgender teenager, is now facing criminal charges for defending herself during a confrontation against a group of female students who had been repeatedly harassing her. The other students involved in the confrontation have not been charged. Gutierrez says she had previously gone to school officials seeking help, but the harassment persisted. When confronted by bullies once again, she decided finally to fight back. In a television appearance earlier this month on Melissa Harris Perry's MSNBC, Laverne Cox, the actress from the acclaimed Orange is the New Black, revealed the violence specifically targeted at trans women of color.
But I think Cece's case really is representative of so many of the harsh realities and the intersections of transphobia, transmisogyny, racism, and classism that face the lives of so many trans women of color, right? Our homicide rate is the largest in the LGBT community. In 2012, 53%, over 53% of the homicides were trans women. 73% were people of color. 16% of transgender people have been incarcerated compared to 10% of the rest of the population. So there's forces, systemic forces in our society that say that we're not who we say we are, that disavow our identities, to say that we're always and only the genders that we were assigned at birth, and to say that we should not exist, that we should disappear. Mm-hmm. What is so powerful about Cece's story is that night on June 5th, 2011, she said that I will not disappear. Mm-hmm. I will not be a statistic.
We will continue to keep you updated on this story, and we will be right back.
Missing Justice and the 2110 Center for Gender Advocacy invite you to our annual commemorative march for missing and murdered women. Join us on Friday, February 14th at Place Emily Gamelin at 6 p.m. Guests include Bridget Tolley, the Buffalo Hat Singers, and many others. That's Friday, February 14th at Place Emily Gamelin at 6 p.m. For more details, visit center2110.org or call 514-937-2110. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Shines from my heart.
listening to Spitfire Women of Color Radio 90.3 FM. The time is 6:19. We were just listening to the song The Word Happy by Ari Swan. We're going to go now to an interview with the experimental violinist songwriter Ari Swan. We had a chance to talk with her earlier this month before she opened for the Friends of Freedom Monthly at Resonance Cafe. Swan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This is going to be fun.
So tell us a bit about your journey so far as a musician.
Well, I am a classically trained violinist, so I did my undergrad in violin, and then I took a pretty long break because if anyone's ever gone to music school, they know unless you're like just going to practice 8 hours a day, it really sucks. So I took some time off. And then I moved to Montreal from New York, where I was living, and just started playing with like every band that I possibly could and trying to just kind of like get some experience on stage. And then about 2 years ago, I decided to start my own project. And so now it's kind of gone through like a lot of different formations with mostly my friends playing with me and various people. And now we've kind of like distilled it down to a few musicians who play with me generally. So here I am.
Tell me more about the story behind your compositions or your lyrics or, you know, your approach to music making in general.
Okay. Well, I think I usually do things divided between, like, I'll write either lyrics and then I'll try to set them to music, or I will write music and then try to do lyrics for it. But usually, like, a lot of the lyrics just come from sort of personal stories in my past or just kind of, like, working through things, you know, through kind of a lyrical basis. So it's sort of cryptic, and I'm definitely the only one who knows what's going on, which is great. And then the music is usually, like, really probably classically influenced a lot, and also really, like, indie pop influenced with bands like Broadcast or Stereolab or even, like, you know, actually I've been really into, like, a Middle Eastern kind of influence a little bit, and I just saw Land of Kush the other day, which is awesome. I'd never seen them before. They were so rad, and Sam Shalabi is going to be playing tonight, so that is, like, synergy and happiness, so, yeah.
Definitely. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the songs that we're going to feature, like We Come With Nothing, which is a great title, by the way. I've Come With Nothing, or The Word Happy, these titles are really suggestive. And you were saying that, you know, no one will comprehend your lyrics, but clearly you're working things out.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I've Come With Nothing is sort of written from the perspective of someone who is being forced to deal with something in their life that they're not quite ready for, and it's sort of like there's an outside force pushing them to be like, no, this is like you're the only person who can deal with this right now. So that's a little bit what that song is about. And the word happy is like an ironic title because I was it was like me venting being mad at someone through like through lyrics, basically. So it was just like feeling like when you're sacrificing too much and not necessarily getting enough in return, and just sort of in your life and with people around you and that kind of in your job and your school or whatever. And so it was kind of about that.
Do you want to just expand a little bit about sort of your compositions, like the boundaries that you're pushing, what you're trying to do musically with your arrangements?
Yeah. Well, since I'm a violinist, it's like pretty much the only thing I know how to write for. So like writing for strings was like a sort of easy cop out for me to some degree. But also I'm really, like, I've spent my whole life listening to classical music, playing classical music. So there's definitely like a huge base for that. But I'm I'm hoping to expand it both sonically and kind of with like technique, right? Like I don't know exactly where I'm going yet. Like I'm still really in the beginning phases, so it's kind of an experiment for me as well to see where I will end up. But all I know is that I do really want to keep trying to use sounds that aren't as common, or try to find something that's like original or unique to say.
Do you want to tell me a bit about the workshops that you've been working on then, like in terms of improvisation?
Yeah, so I am currently a graduate student at McGill in music education, and part of basically what I'm doing is a bit of a stage, and have been for 2 years, is working at a workshop called Music Addict, which is held at J2K. It's the drop-in center of Head and Hands. And sort of our mantra is the idea of using improvisation to teach people music, to help them sort of gain self-esteem, gain agency, and then to kind of expose people to new musical genres, new ways of playing instruments. And it's really great. Like, the center tends to cater to youth that are maybe a little bit more marginalized, either because of socioeconomic status, immigration status, just being like a visible minority, being a woman. Like, there's, you know, we really cater to a large group. And so the goal is to create like this safe space where people feel comfortable trying different instruments, comfortable like expressing themselves while, you know, actually learning something more about music.
What are the challenges that you've been facing as a musician in Montreal and trying to carve out a space in general, survive as a musician?
For sure, making music that is not easily, I guess, not pigeonholed, but not easily sort of in a genre, can be really difficult, right? Like, who do you play with? How do you get people to sort of listen to it? How do you convince people that they want to listen to something that might be slightly more challenging or slightly more just not something they've heard before, something they have to think about? So that's definitely been, it's a bit of a challenge. And I know that there's probably a bit of an expectation for me to like do, you know, if you're sort of like a black lady singer songwriter, sometimes there's more of a thought that you might be more R&B, or that you might be a little more jazz oriented, or that your music is maybe more political or something. And it's like, it's not really, I'm just coming from like this different framework that, yeah, I guess it's a little bit unique, but
do you want to expand upon, say, your experiences as, say, an American woman of color coming to Montreal, and maybe just like your perspective on that? Because I feel, and we've been discussing this a lot on our show, Spitfire, that there's just been so much discrimination just in the climate, and xenophobia, and, you know, endorsement by the government. And it's just like interesting to hear other people's perspectives on that.
Yeah, it's definitely been weird, because as an American, like, you're kind of raised to believe that, like, Canada is this really, really diverse and really open place. And, like, to some degree it is, for sure. And there are a lot of things here that are, that, like, there's a reason that I'm living here, for absolutely for sure, and I love it here. But it was strange to see, like, these governmental regulations come in. Like, I came in maybe a year before the student protests started, and to suddenly see the government being like, no, 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 you can't protest anymore. And then just watching, like, the liberties of people really, really good just be stifled. And, I mean, there is definitely a certain level of kind of, like, xenophobia maybe that exists here. Like, again, as I've said, I've had, like, a lot of really openness in where I live with my friends, my colleagues, all that kind of stuff. So for sure, I'm assuming that it's a minority of people here. But I have had friends tell me that, like, you know, they've been living in St. Charles, for example, and they'll call the police for, like, some reason, and the police will ask, oh, was the person who's following you black? Or, like, you know, just things like that, or, like, little things where, like, you can see that people are feeling a little bit uncomfortable with the level of diversity. Or, like, the kids in my workshop will tell me that, like, I recently there were three kids who, maybe, like, 14, 15, young black kids, and, like, I'm sure they're definitely, like, doing something, like, whatever juvenile delinquency, throwing things at people, like kid stuff in the subway, right? But somebody called the cops on them, and three cop cars showed up, as well as a police van. So it was like, there is a weird kind of disproportion to, like, the police presence and maybe, like, visible minorities. I don't know. I'm definitely sort of on a tangent that did not lead to a good thesis, but yeah, it's been really interesting here, that's for sure.
Well, thank you so much for hanging with us at Spitfire. And I'm super excited about the show. And we're going to be playing some of your unreleased material as well as some feature song from your EP. What's coming up next, and where can our audience check your shit out?
So you can check me out on Facebook, of course. It's just, you know, Facebook/RA Swan Music, I feel like. And then my Bandcamp, raswan.bandcamp.com. And yeah, right now we don't have any shows lined up, but me and the cellist Quinn Brander are probably going to work on just recording some stuff for fun. And then my friend Jamie Thompson, who you guys can't see but is actually sitting behind Victoria right now, well, he was, who's the person who recorded the EP, we're probably going to work on some stuff in the future as well. So yeah, that's mostly what's coming up. I'm hoping to like get going on a full-length album soon, so yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to Spitfire Radio, CKUT 90.3 FM. That was I've Come With Nothing by Ari Swan. Earlier, we heard an unreleased track, The Word Happy. You can check her out on Facebook and Bandcamp. Just Google Ari Swan. She's doing fantastic work in the Montreal music and NDG community right now. Looking forward to digging deeper with her on her Music Addict Mondays in NDG. Turning now to Mercedes.
Thank you, Victoria. So the story that I want to put out there today is one that I came across completely by accident as I was surfing MSN Messenger. Yeah, I know. I'm very old school, but it's okay. So basically, 13-year-old Tanel Starr made headlines this month when she sported a cleverly designed hoodie at her Saskatchewan school. The bright pink hoodie read, "Got Land" on the front and "Thank an Indian" on the back. Now, for most of us with a sense of humor and an inkling about the message behind the statement, when we read the shirt, there's an air of respect that you can't help but have for this young woman. However, for some, it was a grave offense. The sweatshirt had offended some students at her school, and as a result, Star was asked to remove it by teachers. At some point, the suggestion was even made to wear the hoodie inside out, which, one, makes no sense because the point is for people to see the message, and two, wearing it inside out is just a fashion no-no. However, she continued to wear it in the days to follow. Good on you, girl. The reason for Star's adamant defiance to remove the hood was because, and I quote, "It supports our treaty and land rights. It's important." But what is strange about her situation is that she reports having worn the sweater after Christmas break with no problem. So if the students and the school were fine with it before, what these individuals have to be offended about now is beyond me. It is not as if she had anything outrageous or outlandish scrawled across her shirt that one could deem inappropriate. For heaven's sake, what do grade 8 students have to be politically offended by at age 13 and 14? The greatest offense to them would probably occur if pop culture suddenly decided not to idolize Taylor Swift. In any case, some of the offended students believe the statement to be racist. But what in fact about the statement is racist? Is it discriminatory? Does it target a certain demographic on the basis of skin color? Is Star's fashion choice in itself controversial? Or is it the fact that she is an Aboriginal female speaking out against the colonizer? In my opinion, the reason that these children felt offended is that they needed a reason to feel attacked. They needed a reason to be oblivious to their white privilege and become victims of some kind of imagined discrimination. This type of political and personal expression made by Star should have prompted the school to allow her to educate her peers on Canada's history with First Nations people. And I'm not talking about the sugar-coated fairy tale version, but also allow her a space to educate them on the meaning behind her actions. But I guess this is an idealized way of thinking in terms of non-white people of color ever being allowed a platform to voice their opinions without white oppressors shutting them down. Why I say this is because not only was Star wearing the sweater in school a controversial issue, it escalated to the point where members of the community began to jump on the I am offended bandwagon. An important point made by Star in her interview was when she said, "We were taught Indians were on this land first, so why are people offended?" It's true. We are taught in every history book, from elementary school to higher education, that Aboriginals were here before European colonizers. So how is it possible to deny it? How do you get offended by something that is basically the truth? But throughout this entire situation, this is one time where we can semi-say all's well that ends well, depending on how one decides to look at the situation. The end result of this fashion fiasco was a meeting between the school and leaders of the Star Blanket First Nation, where an understanding of Star's actions was achieved, and that the situation was probably, and the conclusion came to where the situation was probably blown out of proportion by students who reported back to their parents. Furthermore, Jeff Menard, the designer and member of the Pine Creek First Nations, had been getting more and more requests for this hoodie. It may seem like it is a consumerist fashion craze, but the point is that the message is being put out there. People need to be aware of their own positions and how they got there. There needs to be accountability on their part and the acknowledgement of who is calling them out. What started is more than wear a hoodie. She made people think. Thank you.
There's some things I just can't tell you about, honey. Most people was addicted to coffee and snuff. The slumber, you are my sunshine, my only sunshine, and segregation. No, honey, it didn't affect me. Oh, what should the answer be? It was a song he used to sing. Over here and over there, clear today, this cloudy day, Jesus washed away my sins. Methodists used to preach in different towns and states, in Alabama, the Delta, Tupelo, didn't give us any money since we had our own house. Didn't have electric, thought we didn't need it. There are some things I just can't tell you about, honey. There are some things I just can't tell you about, honey. Lucy Roberts, 1962, East St. Louis, 1964. Willie Mae is 91, 1946. They got land of their own. Miss Lucille Nichols was my teacher's name. At Rogers High, Mama was from a family of sharecroppers and Daddy was too. They heaped abuse on him, therefore, and said, thou art his. He could do nothing. They answered and said to him, thou, and they turned him out. Auntie Duck was her nickname there. Some things I just can't tell you about, honey. White man will ring the bell at 12 noon and ring it again 24 miles away from Jackson, Mississippi. Mississippi is a beautiful place. When I die, I wish to be buried there. Courthouse right there in the center of town. I was gone by all the time that stuff started happening in Mississippi. M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I. Mississippi is a beautiful place. Didn't see it on TV and we closed the country schools. I never even saw white people. Those white folk weren't bothering us. Grant, we beseech through our Lord. Woman came to man of God, saw her coming towards him. He said, black people. Lessie Mae Luckett, April 18th, August 19th, one room schoolhouse. Black people got paid. April 11th, 1926. I just turned 80. Little black boys and girls. She and Daddy married at 16. They grew up in the same neighborhood. Reverend John Roberts was his name. Reverend John Roberts was his name. At that time, Jesus went to a town called and his disciples and a large crowd went with him. Reverend John Roberts was his name. They both died on the same day. July 18th, 1966. Daddy died in the morning and Mama died at night. There are some things I just can't tell you about, honey, and you are with me again. Some other love has found you now. Coal, candles, Canton, Camden, Mississippi. Mississippi is a beautiful place. 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 Mississippi is a beautiful place.
That was Matana Roberts, Thanks Be You. You're listening to Spitfire Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. It is 6:45. We turn now to a Spitfire exclusive brought to us by Malek.
Thanks, Alyssa. Khurshid Begum Awan, Evelia Castrello Santoyo, Yvonne Hernandez. What do all these names have in common? Well, they each represent brave, racialized women facing extraordinary circumstances, violence, abuse, ill health, each one seeking refuge and pursuing the hope of better in Canada, and yet each one hunted by the Canada Border Services Agency. We speak tonight with Rosalind Wong, an organizer with Solidarity Across Borders, Solidarité Sans Frontières, which supports migrants like these. Roz, thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
So I mentioned some names in the intro. Can you tell us a little bit about these women, who they are, and what they have in common?
Yeah, these extraordinary women have a lot in common, actually, even though their stories are so personal. There are three women who moved to Canada as migrants, leaving behind their countries of origin, where each of them faced the threat of violence. There are three people who have been deemed undesirables by the Canadian state through the rejection of their refugee status and lost basically the right to be on this territory, the right to exist, the right to seek help, the right to so many resources that Canadians take for granted. But what also binds them together is their extraordinary courage. These are three women who decided to go public, who decided to make courageous choices. Yvonne is a woman, or Yvonne Hernandez came to Canada in 2009, lived without status for 1.5 years and had a baby. And she was in an abusive relationship here in Montreal. On December 11th of 2013, she left her partner and entered into a women's shelter. Her partner then responded by denouncing her to immigration authorities and suing for sole custody of their child. In a federal, in a Quebec family court, the judge then gave that sole custody to her ex, disregarding allegations of abuse, and basically based on the fact that she lived in poverty and the precarity of that's been created by the Canadian state by the fact that she had no status. These are three women who have just spoken out about their campaign, and unlike so many that live in isolation and fear, have decided to talk about what's happening to them.
Wow. I wonder what you think about how sort of the climate for migrants has changed in the past 8 years. I pick 8 years because that's the time in which Harper has been prime minister and the Conservatives have been in power. And it kind of seems like the doors to Canada are closing. And I'm wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, I think, first of all, Solidarity Across Borders has been active since 2001, and we hold that the history and the need for organizations like that have existed pretty much since the existence of the Canadian state. Canada is rooted and its foundations in a history of systemic racism and displacement. Borders have always been used by the Canadian state to determine which people are worthy of integrating into our nation, mainly white, able-bodied, Anglo-Saxon, usually men, to integrate into our nation with full rights as citizens, and those who need to earn the right, usually through labor and suffering here for generations, often without their families and without full rights. So having said that, there's definitely been a more extreme climate in which the racism has become even more overt and even more explicit. For example, just through omnibus criminal laws, changes to the criminal code, the government has given itself power to increasingly criminalize, incarcerate racialized and immigrant folks, as well as make it just simply easier to deport them, which we call through something called double punishment, whereby someone who is punished twice for a crime, whereas that is absolutely illegal for Canadians to be punished twice in the justice system. So they're punished both by the penal system and then through deportation, even though some of these people are, in the most extreme case of Deepan, a guy born in Ottawa, they're trying to revoke his citizenship and deport him right away. So there are just so many ways they're creating the fake, or they're increasing the myth of refugee seekers as asylum, as abusive queue jumpers stealing Canadian jobs. They've put concerted efforts in a communication strategy attacking migrants in this way. They've also closed doors to permanent residency for people, making it harder for people to sponsor their parents and our grandparents, bringing them over. It's clear that I would not be here today if the laws were currently in place. What they are doing then is allowing people to come either as rich investor classes or as temporary foreign workers. And that program has just exploded. And what that's creating is a constant precarity, a source of what capitalism feeds on, a constant availability of disposable labor with no access to rights or recourses. And that's just... that's just some of how the immigration system has been completely transformed since the Conservatives took power.
So basically it's like, we only want you here if you're able to work. And so in the case of someone like Madame Awan or Madame Santoyo, if you have a health condition, I know Madame Awan was older, she had heart issues, Ms. Santoyo was undergoing treatment for cancer, Canada's compassionate response is basically hit the bricks, get to stepping, we don't care. We don't even care if you're in the middle of chemo.
Absolutely, and that concerns women of color. Just to speak a little bit about the Awan family, whose support committee I'm on, she's a grandmother of 57. Her daughter came here in 2000, fleeing an abusive of marriage and actually obtained refugee status and citizenship. She's worked two jobs to support her family as well as to pay her ex, who exploits them and was beating up her parents and threatening them in order to extort money from her back in Pakistan. So she's been working two jobs pretty much 7 days a week and just simply to support her family. And this woman is being seen as faking her illness, even though she had a heart attack in CBS offices in July. And they subsequently tried to deport her when she was admitted in the hospital 2 weeks later. So faced with that, faced with the possibility of violence and threats in Pakistan, faced with the possibility of being separated indefinitely from her daughter and her grandson, who she actually raised as her own after her daughter Tyra came to Canada, and faced with the danger to her life, she made the courageous decision again to find refuge and sanctuary in a Montreal church. And it does concern women of color because defining migrants and defining people's rights based on who's able to work, the work that she has, the amazing woman that this person is, the grandmother she is, the love that she gives, her talent, her beauty has been completely invisibilized by the system. Her humanity has been completely taken away from her or in the views of this government, who treats her like a fake. So, yeah.
So, Roz, just to wrap up here, yeah. I'm wondering, sort of on a personal note, what it is that brought you into the struggle for migrant justice, what continues to spur you on, and just for our listeners out there, what can people who want to support migrants, particularly women like the ones we've discussed tonight, what can they do?
Yeah, great questions. I feel what brought me, I actually moved to Montreal 5 years ago, started working in a rape crisis center, and was working increasingly with women who were migrants, and just seeing how all these systems actually perpetuate violence against women. To go back to Yvonne's case, she was a mother who was actually picked up when she was trying to drop off her son to that ex who denounced her. The police were waiting for her at Barrie UQAM Metro. The simple act of being a mother and trying to see her child became a dangerous act in this country. So I think it's rage. I think it's rage that brought me to do this type of thing. It's rage, but it's also hope. It's also inspiration. It's also humility from the people who are directly affected, who are making these brave choices every day, and a commitment to their dignity faced with the government's desire to just completely erase their humanity. Mm-hmm. If people want to get involved, I mean, there's Yvonne might be received a deportation date for February 7th, but there's a huge and a bubbling campaign against her deportation. And they can find out more at www.solidaritesansfrontieres.org. They can also come tonight. There's a benefit concert for Mrs. Awan taking place at La Sala Rosa at 9 p.m. There's also a monthly picket that will happen at the CBSA office, 1010 St. Antoine, this Friday at noon. So we'd love to see you out there.
Thank you so much for being here, Roz. I hope you'll all check out the concert tonight. Come to the picket. I was there myself and very happy to freeze my ASSS off. And we'll have you back real soon and keep us updated on these cases. Thanks so much, Roz.
Thank you.
Thank you, Malek. Thank you, Rosalind, for bringing us that exclusive on Spitfire Women of Color Radio, only on CKUT 90.3 FM.
That brings us to the end of the show. We thank everyone who made this show possible. Thank you, Alyssa, Mercedes V, and your girl Malek holding it down. Thank you to Rosalind Wong, and also to our in-studio guest, Gaushika Madivan. Very happy to have you here.
Turn me up.
Oh,
I want to hear the music.
I also wanted to say happy new.
Are we on the air?
I also wanted to say happy Lunar New Year of the Horus. Special shout out to our listeners from the Chinese community here in Montreal, Canada, and beyond.
Spitfire Women of Color Radio broadcasts every last Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. on CKUT Radio 90.3 FM. You can write to us at spitfire@ckut.ca and check out www.spitfire.blogspot.com. Also, follow us on Twitter at Spitfire Radio.
Hey!
nothing gained, nothing tried. Very few even try. Most just wanna get high from the cradle to the grave. Don't wanna be your slave, and I'm not gonna take it how you wanna. Love me or hate me, support me or snake me. Either way, I show love. Let it make me or break me. I'm the queen of self-esteem. Don't sweat the cream, just set the scene. Get screamed like how you mean. Straight up, one of the best that's been. Ain't no puppet on a string. Like them hoes sucking on your thing. Overworked and underpaid for days. Behave, I'm not gonna be your slave. People screaming hardcore, living in the ghetto, sleeping on the floor. What you thought I was gonna rise? Do my thing, get my piece of the pie. You're holding your breath for great God out the sky. Best live your life, cause you just waiting to die. People still taking life for a joke. Can't see the fire, but you blow out of smoke. If you didn't get it, you got what you deserve. Just like that, that's my word. Every day I wake up, scheming on the come up. No daydreaming, got to stay one up. How you gonna sit back and wait on the wealth? Gotta go get it, motivate yourself. If not, you only perpetrate yourself. And at the end of the day, you only hate yourself. If you know me, you know my mind. Take in charge. You got what it takes to make it. Make it all. The world got a problem, and it's yours. That's why I wrote this rhyme. You can quote this line, cause I focus mine. Living in some hopeless times, or so it seems. Never let go of your dreams, nah, man. Nah, man. Just do what you got to do.